Hi, everybody. It's the Work Show, and it's April. What's that sound? Tax time. We spoke with Mark Rogers of Alexander Varga CPA in Catskill and Ravenna. Mark's been doing it for years. He talked to us about what's involved with doing one's income taxes these days. And then later, in what we'll hear after a short break, he talked about his own work history some.
For years, many people were able to prepare their own income taxes. Over the years, however, with more and more tax credits and different rates of taxes, it's getting harder to prepare them by hand. Of course, many sophisticated taxpayers who like computers, they certainly can prepare their own taxes using TurboTax. We don't have a problem with that. Sometimes people who are not very sophisticated with computers or financially, they will go to some of the larger tax preparing services. I believe there's a Jackson Hewitt in Walmart, and there's an H&R Block.
I guess it's hard to talk about a competitor.
Right. They're not really a competitor. You know, for people who go to H&R Block, we usually don't lose a lot of people from there. We may get people coming to us from H&R Block. One of their benefits are, of course, they have national advertising, which tends to drive people into their locations, and also the refund anticipation loan. For some people, they cannot get their refund back quick enough. If you come to any other tax preparer, you can electronically file. Of course, now you have to electronically file. And if you have a bank account, you can get your refund back in about a week. Mm-hmm. But for some taxpayers, a week is not long enough. They'd like to have a check the next day. That's where H&R Block does a good job of giving people a loan. That's paid back through their refund. But I think if you take a look at the total fees that someone pays when they go to H&R Block, I think if they went to another tax preparer, not necessarily a CPA, but if they went to another tax preparer, they could probably save quite a bit of money. It's a busy time of the year. No complaints from me. I'd rather be busy this time of the year. If you're an accountant, you're not busy this time of the year. Something's wrong. That's for sure. We get a full range of people. That's one of the interesting parts of being a tax preparer. Of course, we're CPAs, not just tax preparers. We do this all year long, but that's one of the this is one of the interesting times of the year. Many times throughout the year, we're doing a lot of analytical work. We're not meeting a lot of people. During tax time, we do meet a lot of people and from all different kinds of situations.
What portion gets money back in terms of refunds?
It's funny. This time of the year, as you know, we're getting close to April 15th, these the people who come in now, more often than not, will owe money. The people who come in early March and in February, those are the people who are getting money back. So clearly, that's the reason why we're seeing them so early, because they'd like their money back quicker. The closer you get to April 15th, when people are coming in now, it's because they realize that they're probably going to have to owe money.
Do taxes or the tax rates affect the work that people do?
Okay, there seems to be two separate worlds as far as taxpayers go. Those who work as employees, many, and their taxes are withheld from their pay. So that's something they don't even see. Their expectation is that they've had enough tax withheld through their payroll that at year end they should break even or get some money back. Now, the other half of the universe are people who are self-employed or people who are investors. They end up having to pay their taxes in themselves quarterly. But more often than not, especially with younger people who are self-employed, they don't pay quarterly taxes, and this time of the year is a big reckoning, a potentially large tax liability. Now, the other thing that separates people who are who work as employees from those who are self-employed is self-employed people, more often than not, especially if they have just a sole proprietorship, which is reported on a Schedule C, those people, the net income from that business is subject to a separate tax that not a lot of people know about. It's subject to the self-employment tax. Self-employment tax is the equivalent of Social Security. If we work for somebody as an employee, the employer deducts essentially 7.65% for Social Security and Medicare, although that rate came down last year by 2 points. Then the employer, in turn, matches that amount and pays that amount into the IRS. So essentially, 15.3% of Social Security is paid in for all people who work as an employee. Now, if you're self-employed, that 15.3% tax is called self-employment tax, and that's calculated on your net income from self-employment after writing off all ordinary and necessary business expenses. And that tax oftentimes results in a good-sized tax due for people who are self-employed.
And that's where it gets complicated in terms of doing all the itemizations and the deductions and working at that Schedule C.
Yes, it certainly is. And when we think of somebody who's self-employed, we think more often than not as an accountant or a plumber or somebody like that. But in this new economy, more and more people are being treated not as employees but as subcontractors. And many employers, they kind of cross the line or bend the line back and forth to determine, you know, 1 year a person may be paid as an employee, and then in order to cut costs, perhaps some employers now are treating them as subcontractors, so they don't have to pay the Social Security tax for them. They don't have to pay workers' comp or things like that. That's what they believe. That's not always the case. But it makes for a complicated income tax return, and it makes for a lot of stress for those kinds of taxpayers.
Yo, no, I never done this before.
No, they ain't.
This is hip hop blues. Yo, I got more flow than the Mississippi River. My rhyme is so dope, it's gonna make you shiver. I need some help, I need some TurboTax. See if I can deduct my man wax, yo. Fat rhymes, fat dopes. Doing your taxes alone is a joke. Got cars, diamond rings. With TurboTax, it ain't no thing, yo. TurboTax got my standardized deductions. My raps are known to cause some eruptions. TurboTax is gonna foot the bill. Don't want IRS up in your grill. Got my 1040 easy. TurboTax will make it easy breezy, yo. TurboTax. cured my blues. Don't have to worry about an audit review. Check it out. Line one and line two, and buckle my shoe. Line eight and line nine, my girl, she is really fine. Take 7-3, and drink some green tea. 12 and line four, got my receipts from the store. 15 divided by 16, I got more cred than James Dean. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Chip's got the flow. Ice, ice, baby. It's white chocolate chip, the Knicks vanilla ice, yo. Maybe.
My family moved to Catskill when I was about 6 years old, and went to Catskill High School, went to Siena College, and I was a finance major. I took an accounting class taught by Alex Varga at Siena College. Mm-hmm. Mr. Varga found out that I was from Catskill, where he had his own accounting practice. He was simultaneously teaching and had an accounting practice. He was looking for an intern. Asked me if I was interested, and I've been here basically ever since.
And how long's that been around?
More than I care to say. Let's just say it's a good story in persistence, in perseverance.
You had mentioned previously, what other jobs had you been doing before that? You'd worked around town, right?
And yes, sure. In high school, I worked at Mike's restaurant at the Point, making pizza. What's interesting is my first job, of course, I worked for the Catskill Daily Mail, and I used to walk by this office every day. I'd pick up the newspapers in the basement of the next door building, which is now the bottle shop, which used to be Central Hudson back then. We'd pick up the papers and we'd deliver them. So those are the kinds of things I had done previously. And then, of course, when I was in college, any number of jobs, painting and things like that in the summer, cleaning offices. We certainly have seen a lot of changes. For a long period of time, Main Street was very busy. There were a lot of people hanging out constantly. I think what changed that perhaps may be the video surveillance. Mm-hmm. But people ask us all the time, how's Main Street doing? Maybe I'm too close to it. I've seen it. We see it every day. And sometimes it's like perception. If you're looking at something every day, it never seems to really change to you. Mm-hmm. But we know better that real estate prices on Main Street did peak a while ago. They're not where they were, and the occupancy rates aren't where they were, say, 5-7 years ago. But Catskill, certainly, you see a trajectory that over time it is progressively getting better and better. I am an optimist, but I can't help but notice when I go out on the street sometimes, there's so many empty parking spaces. I take, you know, strolls to the bank and to the post office. One time I counted, I think it was 16 consecutive empty parking spaces in the middle of the day on Main Street. Mm-hmm. In high school, I wanted to be a journalist for the longest amount of time, no doubt about it. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write for the New York Times. I had also contemplated law. But when I was going to school, and when I was in school, I think the need to make money superseded everything. So I kind of fell into a situation. Mm-hmm. And that it was just economic necessity that kept me going in that one direction. What's very difficult if you work in my field is to be able to describe to your elementary school age children exactly what you do. Mm-hmm. Because the idea of an income tax return doesn't make a lot of sense to them. Mm-hmm. But we try to say essentially that we try to help people with their money. And basically, that's what it boils down to. To be a good accountant, I think you have to have social skills. Not everybody who enters the accounting field have those kinds of strengths. People gravitate towards accounting who like numbers, who like mathematical analysis, so to speak. The math isn't very hard, but the key, many times, is those non-quantitative qualities that you have, skills that you have. That's what makes, I think, a good accountant, the ability perhaps to speak in public, to listen, of course. I think in many professions, the ability to actually listen and not talk over your client is very important. And the ability to write, because many times you have to try to appeal to the IRS or to New York State, and you have to be able to make it easy for that person to make a decision in your client's favor. This time of the year, there's many press releases that the IRS have. They like it to appear in newspapers and on the TV news, stories about people being audited. These are high-profile cases that they try to, you know, just put a little bit of fear in people. Now, in actuality, the IRS does a lot less random audits than they used to. My discussions with Mr. Varga, in the past, many of his best clients came in as the result of a random audit. They came to a CPA who was not, you know, is not going to be intimidated by the IRS, knows what the IRS is looking for, and can, you know, perhaps help clear up any problems as the result of an audit. Now, my belief, and I can't statistically back this up, but I have read it along the years, that the IRS cut back on those kind of random audits. They weren't very popular because it was truly random. You could have a 14-year-old child get selected for auditing, for to have his, you know, his records audited. He may have had a summer job or something like that. I've actually seen that. And that created a lot of bad press, too, because, you know, because of those ridiculous situations. I think the IRS, and that's also is very costly to pay people to go out and do these audits. So I think they've gotten away from that. Now, an IRS audit is likely to be a computer-generated letter that they've matched. They have, you know, 1099s and things like that that are sent in by banks or by other people. And they're matching amounts reported to them from third parties with amounts that you've reported on your income tax return. If there's a discrepancy, they want to know why. Mm-hmm. Another common audit, like a desk audit, I think they call them, is they pick up perhaps one expense item on your return and ask you to fully document, to send in all the documentation behind it. The typical one there would be auto expense. And I have to believe the IRS takes a look at someone's travel and auto expense in relation to their income. If it looks like it's relatively high, that may, what they call a red flag for that expense. We've seen that in a couple of instances where clients have come to us with that situation where a tax preparer or perhaps a self-prepared return showed that they had, for instance, $30,000 or $40,000 in business mileage during the year. The IRS writes a letter that says, show us your log of the miles you've traveled. Also send us proof of what your beginning odometer reading was and your ending odometer reading during the year, as evidenced by a receipt from a repair shop. So that's good advice to anybody, any employee or self-employed person who has an automobile that they use partially for business. You want to establish what your mileage was in the beginning of the year and the end of the year. Of course, the IRS uses those as a limit. If they see that you've only traveled 15,000 miles during the year, you can only prove that. You can't certainly substantiate a 40,000-mile expense. So when it comes to audit, those are the kinds of things that the IRS is looking for. That's why it pays to go, perhaps, to an experienced tax preparer who can maybe give you some frank advice as to maybe some of your expenses seem a little bit high. Mm. Or out of line.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah. Too small. Be thankful.
As usual, we went over to Columbia Green Community College and met up with M.A. Wiltsey, head of workforce for our two counties. We spoke with her a bit about how things are looking in terms of the job market. What's happening with people? There was a lot of talk about unemployment numbers dropping on a national basis, and yet they've been going up on a local basis. There's also talk about funding dropping and things becoming a little more difficult for those looking for a job. And as usual, MA straightened us out on what's really happening.
It's actually been busier than it was at the same time last year. There's been a few less, we look at things quarterly from January to March. And although there were a few less new applicants for unemployment insurance, the number of new people coming into our doors increased from the same time frame last year.
What do you think would account for that?
I'm not quite sure. I know we had a plant closing in Saugerties, and a lot of the people that worked there lived in Greene County, so they're coming to us for services. And I'm wondering whether or not the bad weather, or the good weather that we had this winter, affected some people in their jobs in terms of making their living off of, let's say, tourism related to snow, perhaps even cleaning the roads. A lot of, I think, construction workers spend their off months, you know, making jobs out of at the end of each year. For the last 3 years, the number of teachers coming in our doors has increased. There's been layoffs each year at, mm-hmm. In June. From what we're hearing, it might happen again. But I'm really not clear about exactly how many. I don't have exact figures, but it's not a great time to be a teacher. It's the same with being a teacher as it is with practically any other occupation. If you've got science and math and what we call STEM skills, you're more likely to be able to find employment than you are if you have the liberal arts kinds of skills. So I don't think that people are necessarily waiting a whole long time.
Every day, more taxation. And no representation. Every day, more taxation. And no representation. Up to doctors gone on strike. And we no have no electric light. Fire brigade man join the fight. And we ain't got no water in the pipe. Judgment upon the land, and we can't find the promised land. Judgment upon the land, and we can't find the promised land. Cause of living gone up high, and the housewife begin to cry. Cause of living gone up high, and the housewife begin to cry. Up to the nurses gone on strike, and the police sick overnight. The bus drivers join the fight. Street cleaners say that them wages light.
on unemployment insurance, part of the deal for them to collect benefits is that they have to come here at least once and make sure that they understand the services that we have to offer. People who lose their jobs but aren't eligible for whatever reason for unemployment insurance, it might take them a little bit longer to get in here, but they generally come fairly quickly.
And then what are the steps once you're in here?
Well, we try to look at their skills and their background. That's the first step, is we do what we call an initial assessment to review their background and to determine what services we might have to help them get a job. Typically in the past, one of the things we'd also look at is their skills and whether or not their skills are outdated and whether or not training services would be appropriate for them to upgrade their skills. Unfortunately, because of federal cutbacks, we have very little funds. We've used up our funds until July of this year already to help people retrain. So we still talk to them about going back to school, but unfortunately we don't have the financial aid to assist them. They'd have to look for other sources.
So the classes that are going on here are funded through federal, like the ones down the hall?
Yes.
Here?
All federal dollars.
And so when they come in, are they filling out forms, or there's also a personal interview element?
They fill out a form, and then they meet with somebody. And it's personal. They meet with an employment advisor for at least a half hour. And it's discussed with them what services we have. We also enroll them in the New York State Department of Labor Job Bank. And we outline their skills, what they have in that job bank. And then they're automatically matched with any new jobs that come in. So if something comes in that looks like it would fit their skills, then they get a letter. And there's another program that they're enrolled in that's called Smart Resume. And that'll do a constant match and send them an email.
Okay.
About job openings that might be appropriate.
And then how are people feeling about that need to change, like, their employment track?
Yeah. That's always a tough one, because people look at it in terms of some people are ready for it. They know that their skills aren't going to get them a job anymore, and they want to go on and change occupations. Other people are a little bit more reserved about it because they're going to be out of the labor market if they go to school full time. So there's an income loss while they're in school, and that makes them nervous. Going part-time extends the amount of time that they have to do that. So it can be a daunting task to make that kind of decision.
And is it most of the people who come, have they chosen their careers up to that point or kind of stumbled into them?
I would say that the people who want to change their occupation and go back to school have probably somewhat stumbled into them. Other people perhaps have chosen their careers over the course of time. I mean, we have people that come in with very little formal education and people with master's degrees, and so there's a big difference there.
And do they sit in the same classes then?
In terms of some of them, what you're supposed to put in a resume applies to anybody.
Yeah.
Interviewing skills can apply to anybody. Your specific situation is going to be different, but the way you go about answering questions is similar. We have an advanced job search workshop for people who perhaps need to learn how to do more networking, either online or through associations that they belong to. So that's really for a focus group of perhaps more skilled job seekers or more professional level.
Do you all deal with people having to make lifestyle changes to kind of fit the new employment picture, either having to look at their living situations, their houses?
Fortunately, we have seen some of that, and people being very nervous about losing their homes. And
do you all advise people in those areas, or is that a whole other realm?
Yeah, we're not financial experts by any means, but we do try to make appropriate referrals. We have connections with the Consumer Credit Counseling Service out of Albany and all the local services for other people, like community action agencies, Department of Social Services, healthcare is a big one. There's discussion about a new employer coming into Hudson. There's some things that I'm not allowed to talk about that might be happening. And then there's the water park in Coxsackie that might eventually happen. But in terms of something that's real recent, that is spawning a lot of job growth, I haven't seen it.
And you know, we've talked in the past about the whole Malta Park up there, and the big companies moving in up there. Is that having any ripple effect down this area?
Not yet. That I've seen in terms of a major company coming in here to be a supplier to that. I haven't heard of any plans along those lines yet.
So a lot of the retraining is for kind of more general fields that will be ramping up, or
The retraining that we do, you know, people come in with specific needs and specific interests. The one thing that we always encourage is healthcare, because that's where you're going to find employment. So if you have any kind of interest or willingness to work with sick people, mm-hmm. and some people can't, I don't think I could, but you're going to find employment, and we'd encourage that kind of training. Truck driving, because it's short term and it's a skill that can be used, if you're willing to go over the road or do a lot of heavy lifting, getting your Class 1 license is also one that's very popular, a training program that's very popular, because it's short term. You can be done in a month, and you can be making $13 to $15 an hour easily. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of computer training. It's amazing how many people, for people who know computers and know how to use them and know how to use the internet, I think they'd be surprised by the number of people who don't. And the number of people who have an aversion to this new technology that isn't really necessarily new anymore. So we do a lot of computer training and trying to get people to understand that conducting a job search, even if you go into a job that doesn't require computers, in this day and age, to conduct a job search, you really need to have that kind of understanding. And even if you're not sitting at a PC for your job, there's going to be computers somewhere in there. So understanding the basics about how they work is going to help you no matter what occupation you go into, because somewhere along the line you're going to hit that technology in some form in your job.
And how much of what is done here at Workforce it has to do with this building morale by just coming in and talking to professionals about the situation? How much does that?
I think that plays a big part in it, and making sure that people are feeling that they're doing what they should be doing to look for work, to knowing that it's a tough job market, and to know that they're developing the skills that are going to help them as best they can in terms of finding a new employment.
You made money that ain't
Emily Feeney has been the tax collector in the town of Cairo for over 20 years. This month, she was named Employee of the Month by the town supervisor, Ted Banta. She originally started working with her town as a secretary to the supervisor, working with both Jim Keefe and, before that, Bill Lawrence, whose voice we've heard here on WGXC. She speaks about what's involved with tax collecting, which is not the same thing as income tax, and really doesn't have anything to do with April 15th. It has to do with your property taxes on a town and county level. After a short break, she will then talk about her own work history, as well as what she remembers of Cairo in times past. How long have you been in this job now?
20 years at the end of December. 2011, I had 20 years in.
Wow. And had you worked as an assistant before, or did you come right in as tax?
I came in as tax collector. I was secretary with Jim Keefe. Well, I started with Bill Lawrence as secretary. Then Jim took over, and I stayed as secretary. Then Millie McManus retired, and Jim, they asked me if I would do tax collecting, the both jobs. Well, we have to do a daily record. We have to do those sheets and the warrant book. The warrant book tells you how much I have to give the county and how much I have to give the town. The town gets all their money first, and then I pay the county. The town gets all the penalties, and then I send out reminder letters at $2. The town gets that money. In fact, I just got a check here for $1,000 for penalties for a week.
Wow.
Yeah. Then you also have on the computer, and I've just got the tax bills now posted on the internet, and they're going to put them on the town website. I don't think they've done it yet. But then it'll be available on the town website, and you'll be able to tell, well, the whole tax bill, all information.
Oh, so you, not just for yourself, but you could, can somebody then check other people's taxes?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Be everybody, yeah.
And then the tax bills are due in January with you all, or what's the timing?
January without penalty.
Okay.
But I have the books until the end of July. Okay. There's a 1% penalty a month.
How many people are current with their taxes, and how many people can end up being penalized or running behind? Is that changed over time? Or
It's pretty consistent. I usually send around 200 unpaid at the end of my term here. I know a lot more people want receipts.
Jackson, I was named after my father. I followed in his footsteps down here to this factory. And I ain't complaining, wouldn't waste my breath to bother. This work ain't hard, it's only boring as can be. I married Rebecca back in 77, and I still love her, and I guess she loves me too. We go to church on Sunday, 'cause we wanna go to heaven. Me and my family, ain't that how I'm supposed to do? But I'm tired, Lord, I'm tired. Life is wearing me smooth down to the bone. No rest for the weary, you just move on. And I'm tired. only missed 6 days and nights on 20 years of working. Money went to taxes and these bills I've paid on time. The raise I got 6 months ago don't meet the cost of living. Selling my body for these nickels and these dimes. The smell of Becky's coffee rolled me out of bed this morning. I showered and I shaved and dressed and pulled my work boots on. Walked in the kitchen, she was staring out the window. The way she said good morning made me ask, is something wrong? She said, I'm tired. I woke up tired. Life is wearing me smooth down to the bone. No rest for the weary, you just move on. And I guess we'll just keep going until we're gone. And I'm tired. Lord, I'm tired. Said I'm tired.
Originally, I was born in from New Jersey years ago. We moved up.
How old were you when you moved up?
I was in fifth grade.
And how was that move? Had your father retired? Or
retired, yeah.
And what had he done?
He was in the post office.
Okay, so you've got kind of government work running deep in your family.
Yeah.
And how did it feel? Had you come up here as beforehand, like some vacationing? Or?
Yeah.
And so how did it feel to move from New Jersey to here?
Well, I had a brand new pair of roller skates, and I was just learning to roller skates, and where we moved, there were no sidewalks. So I was not happy.
And how long did it take to make new friends and get happy?
No, it was because I had relatives here. You know, I had cousins. My grandmother, they brought my grandmother up from New Jersey for her health.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we moved up that way then.
And you went through the local schools and mm-hmm. everything. What was your first job that you remember?
What was my first job? I think I worked at a 5 and 10 in Catskill in Newbury's. I think that was my first job.
And did you do babysitting or anything like that?
No babysitting.
And then
I did waitress work, you know.
Where did you waitress around?
Winter Clove.
That's a great spot.
And Elsie Miller's place. What was the name of that one? Elsie Miller's.
In Durham or?
No, up in Round Top, just below Winter Clove.
Glen Clove?
Huh?
Glen Clove, is it? Or?
No, just below Winter Clove.
Oh, it was Pickwick House?
Pickwick, that was it, yeah. I worked at Pickwick.
Okay, and how were those places then? They were busy during the summer.
Yes. Right? Yeah, we were very busy. Well, when we first came here, there was everything. It was here. I mean, they had the fairgrounds up there with the big fairs. You could buy shoes. We had a movie. You had everything.
Where was the movie house?
Right next door there where
Gallagher's?
The chamber is, yeah, right there.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how would you get out to work? Would you all share rides out to Winter Clove and Pickwick?
Well, we walked a lot. Mm-hmm. And we rode our bicycles.
And then your working life after all of that, were you married early and raised a family, or how did it work?
I guess I was about 23 when I married, and then I moved down south, and I lived down south for years.
Oh, where?
Well, in Florida, and then in Virginia.
Okay, I grew up in Virginia.
And then I came back here after I got divorced.
Okay, and how was it moving back here? Had it changed?
Yeah, it was a big difference, but I liked it.
And did you start working again? Is that when you started working with the town, or did you have other jobs?
No, before? I worked in a bank. I retired from Fleet Bank.
Okay. And how was Fleet at that time? How many banks were there in town?
That was the only one.
Okay.
First National Bank, State Bank of Albany, Fleet. How many names did it have?
Uh-huh. And were you behind the counter or at a desk job there?
Oh, I was at the counter, then I went to the desk.
So you must have gotten to know everybody there.
Yeah.
And how did that prepare you for this job eventually?
Well, I think working with the figures and then balancing out everything. And because when I was at the desk, I was responsible for not only safe deposit boxes, but the Liberty, the Series E bonds I had, traveler's checks. So I had a lot of response. And we bought and sold stocks and bonds then, too, and treasury bills, which they don't touch anymore now.
Uh-huh. No. And did everybody do their banking locally? It was like the community bank?
They did at that time, yeah. Now they're all over.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, we have three banks now.
Yeah. And so then from there, you retired from there and then started working with Bill? Or was it concurrent?
Did I work someplace else in between? No, I think so. Because 20 years. Geez, I don't remember, tell you the truth.
Uh-huh.
One time I worked for the Board of Elections. That was before the bank, though. I think then I worked for Bill Lawrence.
And he had been teaching, right? Or was he teaching at the same time you were supervisor?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's a great combo.
Yeah.
And so what are some of the changes you've seen in Cairo over all these years?
Well, we don't have the resorts that we had. We used to have a lot of resorts. And we don't have that. We don't have a place to eat.
Uh-huh.
Restaurants. I really can't say we've gained anything. I don't know. I can't see where we've gained.
So what are some of the things you missed most about Cairo of old?
Most?
Yeah.
Well, I think shopping. You have to go so far for anything, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you either have to go to Catskill, you have to go to Hudson, you have to go to Kingston or Albany, someplace like that. And, I mean, as far as even restaurants, we don't,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going a lot for these sports bars, you know. And the Bavarian and those restaurants, they're like open just like towards the end of the week, weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you want to go out on a Monday night, you have to forget that.
Yeah.
Back
then when you'd go out in Cairo of old, I guess you'd go out and see a lot of different people, and it was like a real community at that
point. Yeah. And I knew a lot of people because I did a lot of volunteer work, too.
Mm-hmm.
And through the bank and the volunteer work. And so I knew a lot of people.
And so, but do you meet a lot of, but going back to this job, do you see a lot of people here with the tax collecting job, or is most of it just working with paper?
No, I see a lot of people.
And when does that peak in January, or is it kind of all year round?
Well, January they can pay at the bank, in the Bank of Greene County. They can pay January, they can pay in there. A lot of it's by mail. And people do come in here constantly in January, February. Well, in fact, I had somebody come in this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just like to come right do it right here.
And
we're getting a lot of online payments. Usually are wrong.
Was it hard having to learn all the online stuff, or was it an easy learning curve?
No, it's worked out good. It was easy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was easy.
Do you go online for anything besides work? Do you surf the web?
I did do a few things, yeah.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
The knitting pattern. My deputy and I were doing knitting patterns off there.
Oh, that's good.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you and 19 for me. Cause I'm the tax man. Yes, I'm the tax man. Now dig this. Should 5% appear too small, just be thankful I don't take it all. Tax man is something else, isn't it? Cause I'm the tax man. Yes, I'm the tax man. Now dig this. If you drive a truck, I'll tax the street. And if you try to fix it, I'll tax your seat. If you get too cold, I'll tax the heat. And if you take a walk, and this is awful, I'll tack your feet. Cause I'm the tax man. He's awful.
Thank you for joining us for this month's work show, in which we dealt with the thorny issue of taxes, along with a number of other things. We started off our musical selections this month with Working in a Coal Mine, a version by Devo from the late 1970s, early 1980s. We heard White Chocolate Chip doing hip-hop tax blues. We heard The Great Taxman from the Beatles. We heard Taxation by Prince Buster and his All-Stars. We heard Taxman, Mr. Thief from Cheap Trick, 1977. We heard Tired from Willie Nelson, one of the most touching songs of all time. And finally, we heard a version of Taxman by the great Junior Parker from the early 1970s. Until next month, when we'll be tackling the idea and ideal of May Day, keep on working.
Cause I'm the tax man. Yes, I'm the tax man. And you're working for me. No one but me. tax man is rough. He can come and get you anytime he wanna. Would you believe he can come and get your lady? That tax man is a flip.